Go.
All right, this is Thomas David House of Deegan. And I just wanted to put this message out today so that the people can start to understand more of the fraud that's being perpetrated upon themselves and their family members in this country. We had a swearing-in of the alleged new president commander-in-chief on the 20th of January in this year. And I would like everyone to take a look at Article 2, which sets out the exact wording of the oath he is to take before he can enter the office. And this oath he did follow, except for the last four words, which was, "So help me God." And I know that there will be a lot of Christians in this country that will say, well, that's not so bad. And it's not. I have no problem with it if that is what is proscribed by the contract, the Constitution, but it's not. When you take an oath in this country, it is either prescribed. I think the president's may be the only one that's prescribed by the Constitution. I believe the rest are prescribed either by the state legislatures or Congress. You must take it exactly as it is, and I think we can refer back to, I believe it may have been Barack Obama's or Barry Sotero's first, I believe it was it the first or second one, Leonard, where he had to retake the oath?
It was the first one, I believe.
Okay. He had to retake it because what did he do? He messed up the wording, okay? So that tells you right there that the words of those oaths mean everything. So they had to retake it. Now, did he actually retake it? I don't know, because it was in a closed session. Who knows? I think it was for plausible deniability so that he could not be charged with treason, sedition, or insurrection in the future for the crimes he was about to commit while commander-in-chief and president of a non-existent country, but in fact a corporation owned and controlled by various elite powers both here and in Europe. And so he had to retake the oath. So that should tell us right there that if this Donald J. Trump took an oath and added words to it, that means it would be void. And so he should retake it, should he not, just as Barack did. Now, Barack omitted words. Trump added. Okay? So there's really no difference there because you're taking from or adding to, which obviously you can't do, because if you can take from, then Barack would not have had to have retaken the oath or affirmation. So I want everybody to go and listen to an audio recording or view the video of John J. Trump's actual oath or affirmation that he took to see that, in fact, the last four words he spoke are not prescribed by the original contract, the Constitution for the United States of America, lawfully amended as lawfully as it could be up through 1819. Now, because of this, in actuality, what we have is someone impersonating the president and commander-in-chief of a country. Now, I do want to preface this with the fact that I've done a roughly 30-minute audio on the fraud at the inception of this country, not only under the Articles, but under the Constitution 4, and the fact that none of it has any legitimacy in law, ILR, or otherwise. And so I don't want anybody to think that I've changed my views and said that now that everything is legitimate. It's not. What I'm doing is trying to show the people step by step little things that show that there is no legitimacy at all to this structure, this limit, this system of limit that we call this country, this government. I do have some more documentation concerning the courts that should be going up on hudop.info soon concerning the fact that criminal matters are not criminal matters as they proclaim, but are in fact just a lawsuit, and a lawsuit is monies and other remedies and relief. I also have in my possession now a new document that states that the state of West Virginia was a victim, and it's doing business as the government. This is on their own letterhead. They're doing business as government. And so I hope that the people will refer to hudoc.info or scanretina.com to view these documents. I hope that they spread these around. We need these in the hands of those that can assist us in returning this this land. I can't even say country because it has no legitimacy as an internationally recognized country.
Maybe
it never has.
Maybe soil.
Yeah, the soil. You know, we need to realize that we've been hoodwinked and that this is an ongoing fraud that has been perpetrated for well over 240 years now, and that just because it's been ongoing for 240 years does not in any way make it legitimate or lawful. Okay? There are intricacies of the law that maybe a lot of people do not realize, but, you know, they're very simple things. You know, the Constitution is a contract. We have case law from their own corporate courts that have said that it was a compact between the states and we're not a party to it. If we're not a party to it, how is this Constitution and its procedures, authorities, and powers being made applicable to and upon us? How is that? If we're not a party to it. So let's put it this way. If Leonard and I enter into an agreement to do something, can I come and sue Joe Blow in Michigan for breach of contract by Leonard? Of course not. So how are they doing that to us? Remember, not a single one of us was alive when this purported contract was entered into. Not a single one of us. Not a single one of us was there in 1819 when it was ratified. The 13th Amendment, the original 13th Amendment. You know, none of us are an actual party or signatory to this contract. So if we're not a party or signatory to these contracts, which is what they are, and their own courts have said that is what these documents are, the constitutions of the states are the contracts between the people and the entity called the state and those working by, under, and through the state. Okay, so if we're not parties to this, how are we being held liable to their laws, rules, procedures, acts, ordinances, and others? Okay? You can't be. That's the key. Okay? Now, the other thing is I want people to understand is that there's a simple thing in law that they're not showing you when these people are going to court. There's a lot of court orders that are being entered behind the scenes that the defendants are not being made aware of because if they were, they would say, this is not true. One of them is an old thing in the law where in order for the court to proceed, you had to pronounce yourself to be put upon the state, okay? And what that means is that you're subjecting yourself to the authority of the state. So what does that mean then, if you're subjecting yourself? That means you're volunteering, okay? Now, if those of you that may have read or studied the purported criminal matter that I was involved in for my recent incarceration and kidnapping, you will see that I never once accepted or consented to any of the proceedings. Never once, and yet they proceeded. There was an order entered that said I put myself upon the state. It was mistakenly sent to me after my trial because there's no way they would have sent it to me at any other time. The other thing is that there has to be a joinder of the issues, and the issues would be, let's say, in a criminal matter, they accused me of growing pot. And so then I would walk in and say I deny I grew pot. That means that issue has been joined because there's an affirmation and a denial. So now we have a dispute, a controversy, an action, a case. Okay? And so without these things, those two basic things, the court cannot proceed unless it's outright violating its original contract, as it did in my case, and I have proved over and over again that it did. So I want people to remember these things, that if you are involved in these matters, you want to specifically state that you are not putting yourself upon or consenting to any and all authorities, procedures, or actions taken by these impersonators. You also do not deny the issues. You're going to deny the jurisdiction, the authority. You're going to deny the venue. You're going to deny that the venue is applicable to you, that you're in their venue. The venue is this fictional state of, county of, city of. That's the venue. You're not in something that doesn't exist. You're on the soil. You're on the soil. And I would plead people to go through and look at some of my affidavits from my case because you will see that I addressed many of these issues and many, many more of the entire length and that none of them were ever touched upon by the court or the prosecutor at any point in time. And so, therefore, they lost all legitimacy, authority, or power to proceed against me. And the fact that I am a kidnappee, in fact, and a hostage, in fact, at this point in time, as I have contended on all of my paperwork for the entire time, I have never once stated that I am part of their conglomerate, their corporate conglomerate. Okay, so with this, I will go ahead and conclude. Leonard, is there anything else you think I need to touch on?
There is. I wanted to bring up Article 3, Section 2, Clause 2, which reads as follows. In all cases affecting ambassadors, other public ministers, and consuls, and those in which a state shall be party, the Supreme Court shall have original jurisdiction. That was very, very key in your case because you brought that up and they soldiered right on. The other two points I wanted to bring up, let me explain
that one first real quick because we don't care about the ambassadors or councils or ministers.
But okay, it does say, and those in which a state shall be party, which means...
Correct. That's the part, correct. So the state is a party. Now, I want people to go back and look at my paperwork because we did post paperwork from the state in addition to the paperwork that I wrote. And you will see quite clearly that the state of West Virginia was the moving party, the plaintiff against me, okay?
Yes.
And this is the corporate state, I can't even use de jure state at Congress, but I'm going to use it. Once again, I'm not giving legitimacy to anything, okay? Once again, I'm not giving them legitimacy for anything.
Well, fraud vitiates all, but go ahead.
Correct. So the when it says a state, okay, so the state's a party. You can't deny the state's party because it says state of West Virginia.
Correct.
Thomas State, Deacon, okay, so the state's a party. So now we get back to original jurisdiction. What does that mean? Original jurisdiction means that the case must be heard by them. Okay. Now, at the beginning of this country, I think if you go back and look, you will find that the state was not a party to these. To most of these cases, the criminal matters were normally the people of that state, or it was the person that actually caused the issue. So, in other words, if you assaulted me, Leonard, the criminal action would have been Thomas David Deegan versus Leonard Frank Harview.
Right.
Okay. Wouldn't have been the state. Okay, so now we have the state violating the Constitution. So now if they're violating Article 3, Clause 2, Section 2, then they have to be violating Article 6.
Yes.
And do you want me to call you right back and we can continue on Article 6?
Yeah, you could. I wanted to read Article 6 and Article 2, Section 1. I wanted to read those.
Okay, I'm going to hang up and I'm going to call you right back.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, bye. You there, Leonard?
Yep.
Okay, so now go ahead and do you have Article 6 in front of you?
I do. I'll read it through from the original writing. It says, The senators and representatives before mentioned and the members of the several state legislatures and all executive and judicial officers, both of the United States and of the several states, shall be bound by oath or affirmation to support this Constitution.
Okay, so what we're looking at then is the fact that all of these persons must take an oath, okay, before they can enter office and lawfully discharge their duties as set forth under the original contracts, the Constitution for the United States of America, circa 1789, and last ratified lawfully pursuant to the contract, of course, without giving it legitimacy in 1819. And so that means that these judges must take an oath to uphold, support, and defend the Constitution. And it also states in there, I believe, is it Article 6 that states that the supreme law of the land is this Constitution,
correct.
I believe?
Constitution and treaties and whatever, yes, the supreme law of the
land. Yeah, and the laws made in pursuance thereof shall be the supreme law of the land.
I believe that would be Section 1.
Okay, so if it's the supreme law of the land, the Constitution is the supreme law of the land, that means it is higher than the state constitutions. It means it's higher than any charters, corporate charters, rules, regulations, ordinances, laws, acts, or any other actions taken by legislatures, congresses, the county commissions, whatever it may be. It means it's the top of the food chain, okay? So if it's the top of the food chain, if they violated, what does that mean in actuality? Okay, under contract law, if there's a violation of the contract, it's ultra vires, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's also, if you're looking at charters or constitutions, which are all really the same thing, these are all contracts. They're just different terms because they're utilizing different law forms. Okay, so if this is what they're doing, the state is supposed to have move this action to and file the action in the Supreme Court of the United States, okay, and they failed to do that, then that means that they have violated theirs because they're not upholding, supporting, and defending the supreme law of the land, okay? I think that's very, you can't even make an argument that that's not the case,
correct.
Okay? I mean, it's quite clear. These words are very clear. They were written very clearly. And if you go back in time and look at the books and the law books and all these things written around that time, you will find that these words are given the meaning that you and I think they have and not what the courts and the lawyers have misrepresented them to be now. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And when you misrepresent or redefine things, you're creating confusion. You're creating fraud. Okay? Really, what it is fraud, because they're going to, let's look at it this way. Most people in this country go through a state-sponsored schooling, okay? Now, this state-sponsored schooling is going to teach you that, you know, the word apple means a red fruit from a tree, okay? But then you walk into court and an apple means, I don't know, what would an apple mean?
Orange.
No, who knows? A horse, okay? So
yeah.
They're talking about apples, but they're really talking about horses. You think they're talking about apples. What's happening? What's happening there? They're committing a fraud upon you. Okay. Now, an Entrevere's Act is an entity, a fictional entity, a creation of law, a fiction of law, that is operating outside the boundaries that it was permitted to operate under when it was created. Okay. And so if it's operating outside of those, especially when it comes to corporations, which this entire country and all the entities that purport to be government actually are nothing more than corporations, body politics, These things then lose the authority to operate because by a simple operational law, not a judge's order. See, I want people to understand this, that these things do not require a judge's order or a motion or a hearing or anything else to overturn them.
Now, that's so key. Repeat that again. That is very key for people to understand. Repeat that.
Okay. It does not require a judge's order, a court finding of fact, conclusion of law. It requires nothing. It's an operation of law, which means it's automatic. Okay, so
right.
So as we have proven, and I mean, Gene, Phil, and I had a case 15-0491 in the Supreme Court of Appeals of West Virginia from I believe it's 2015.
Yes.
And of course, you know, they did not rebut anything, and we showed that they were outside the bounds of their charter, the Constitution. Okay, and so. By that mere fact that they then agreed by the silence, okay, they acquiesced, their charter then became null and void. That's an operational law. It did not require the judge to say anything. It did not require an order to be entered or a judgment or a decree or a writ.
Right.
It's all Trevere's acts. And that creates the forfeiture, okay, and the forfeiture would be the voiding. It's a voiding of it. So these constitutions were then voided out by the acts that were outside the boundaries. Now, ultra-vires is a common law term. You can look it up on the internet. It's very simple. It tells you very simply what it is.
Yep.
And normally what it is operating outside the bounds of the contract or charter or constitution that allowed it to exist, or a person under that going outside the bounds of the constitution or the authorities prescribed by it. Okay. And so when they did that, they no longer had a charter. Now, if they no longer have a charter or a corporation contract or a constitution, as you may want to call it, to exist, then they have no efficacy. They have no authority. They have no power to do anything. The only power that would be given to them would be if you gave it to them voluntarily. And I believe that we've proved that quite well. I think people should go to YouTube and Google Kanawha County Court. Meet your straw man. And when you do this, you'll be watching a magistrate hearing of a fellow friend and freedom fighter, Ted Elton, showing you that if you do not consent and you do not accept, you will walk out of court even if you have 13 felonies against you, and you will walk out free and clear. You'll walk out free and clear. So we've already proven that you have to volunteer to be manhandled by these terrorists.
These occupiers.
Because that's what they are. That's what they are. And so they have no efficacy in law. They have no standing, no capacity, no character condition that they can operate with. The other thing is that when something goes bankrupt, okay, it loses sovereignty, it loses authority. So let's say, Leonard, you file bankruptcy. You no longer have control of your assets or your monies because someone else is going to handle them so that they can pay off what you may owe, at least to the ability of your assets to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now remember, our country was declared bankrupt by its unlawful and illegal president because he probably did not take a lawful oath and never actually entered office. And once again, I'm not giving legitimacy to these contracts because they are fraudulent from the beginning. I want people to understand this. I'm just showing them more times that they've committed fraud and misrepresentation.
However, believe it or not, it goes back to our purported first president, George Washington, who did not
Absolutely.
Take an Article 6 oath of office.
He did not.
Correct.
He did not. He said the same thing. So help me God. Okay? And look, I am a spiritual person. I believe that there's a creator of all. Now, you can shoot me down and say that's not Christian or whatever you want
to
call it.
I'd like to make a correction. That was Article 2, Section 1, the words of the oath.
Oh, correct,
what I'm referring to is following the rules set forth in Article 6, where they're bound by
correct.
Oath of affirmation to support this Constitution. None of the presidents
correct.
In history have done that. None of them.
I'm going to say that I believe from my research there may have been one that took it, but I can't even say for sure on that.
According to Ed Rivera.
Okay, well then that's fine. We'll go based upon his word, but let's just, I want to make it very clear that I'm not saying all of them have done this,
okay.
but I'm going to say that the majority have, and that way no one can come back on
there
me and say
go.
That I wasn't true or misleading.
Fair enough.
Okay, so. Now we're back once again to this oath. So let's just state for the fact, let's say that all the presidents did not take a lawful oath, that they missed a word or they added words, okay, and they did not go back and change it. Then that means that, okay, how do laws come into effect in this country? It's by the president signing what Congress or the governor signing what the legislature's passed, okay? So if he's not in office, does he have the authority to sign something into effect that may purport or make applicable to us any authority, power, or procedure? Of course not. Of course not. Because he didn't enter office, so his signature is not valid. It's invalid, which means that all laws, rules, procedures, ordinances, regulations, anything more that may be controlling upon you and I, or they purport to be controlling upon you and I, are invalid. And so what I'm going to step out and let us say is that this present date, every man and woman in federal prison has to be released because there's not a single valid federal law that any of them have been convicted under. And I will say that with definite authority on that.
Yep.
Not a single man in federal prison. Now, when you get to the states, I'm going to say most likely, because of the use of the words in West Virginia, I'm going to base upon the oaths in West Virginia only. They are not properly naming the document they're taking an oath to, which makes it invalid.
Absolutely.
Okay? Absolutely not. So, if that's the case, then that means all those in West Virginia could not be in prison lawfully because, why? Because the governor never took office to sign those things into effect. And once again, I want to make it very clear to people because Ani and a few other people like to say, well, when you get into that, I'm not giving legitimacy to any of this garbage at all. I'm trying to educate the people and to get them to understand that there are constant violations here, constant fraud, constant misrepresentation, constant impersonation being perpetrated upon us and our fellow brothers and sisters on this soil, period. Now, I'm hoping that the people will begin to wake up before it's too late, and we are nearing a nexus point where it's going to be too late to follow, and I will conclude this with saying that if you look at the Department of Homeland Security now and who is going to be running it, you now have an ex-military officer running Department of Homeland Security. Okay? Now, that's a serious problem because that's civil authority, that's civil security for within the bounds of our country. Now, can the military lawfully operate within our country pursuant to the original contract?
Nope.
No. Only in cases of insurrection or rebellion. Now, can you prove to me right now that we have insurrection or rebellion against a lawfully constructed government? Of course you can't, because there isn't a lawfully constructed government here. Okay? Now, with that, I think this is probably enough, maybe too much for the people to grasp at this time.
Yeah, probably right.
So I think we'll stop with this, but I do hope that they will go to hudok.info, and I will make sure that Hudok is posting this with the video or with the audio I did on the Declaration, the Articles, and the Constitution, the fraud that was perpetrated then, so that they can see that even though I may be saying things later down the line have no efficacy, it had no efficacy from the beginning. Fraud vitiates all, even the most solemn contracts,
yes,
period.
Correct.
So I wish to thank you, Leonard, for allowing me to put this out there. And, you know, if anybody has any questions, feel free to contact Hudok. Info. I believe Arnie scanretina.com would probably answer your questions or comments if you go through him as well.
Yep.
All right.
Sounds good.